Good afternoon. It's about 1:12 on Monday, April 11th. Present are Representative Herron, Representative Gardner, Representative Munoz, Co-Chair Feige, and Co-Chair Seaton. Remind everybody about their cell phones. And then today we have HB 58 mining tax, and we have invited testimony, and that is going to be from the agencies DNR and Department of Revenue and Department of Natural Resources. And then we'll put that bill aside, and we have HSJR 2, which is limit of federal intervention in the state. And then on Wednesday we're scheduling with bills previously heard or scheduled. And so is there anything come before the committee before we go further? Seeing none, Katie, would you come forward and put yourself on the record and introduce the bill?
Good afternoon. Katie Kester, staff to Representative Seaton. House Bill 58 reforms mining taxes in the state of Alaska. Mining taxes have been substantially unchanged since statehood. Some royalty language was added in the 80s because previously we had no statutes concerning royalty. So what I'd like to do today is walk you through a sectional analysis of the bill just to kind of explain exactly what House Bill 58 does. That sectional analysis is under the tab labeled Charts and Sectionals in your binder, and it is titled House Bill 58 Simplified Comparative Sectional. This is a sectional analysis that our office created as a way to compare existing statute with the proposals under House Bill 58. There's also a legislative legal sectional behind that if you'd like to refer to that. So if I could just walk you through these changes section by section. Section 1 deals with coal royalties and basically updates statute to reflect regulation. The statutes that authorized coal royalties were created under the territorial legislature and included a provision in them that allowed for the commissioner to update those rates in regulation. And so what we're doing is just kind of making it this official and putting it in statute. Section 2 is a new section, and this was actually a suggestion of Kerwin Krause of the Department of Natural Resources to allow coal lessees to pay the state royalty in kind rather than cash. And this would be applicable for coal-fired power plants, such as the University of Alaska Fairbanks has a coal-fired power plant, and that would be a situation where they could receive the coal as a royalty in kind, and it could be a cost savings for the university and advantageous for them. Sections 3, 4, and 5 of the bill deal with mining rentals, and this is the rentals that a holder of a mining claim, lease, or leasehold location pay. And this is an interesting section because it's based on legislation, also statutes that are quite antiquated and have been updated in regulation. We struggled some with how to deal with updating the rentals. I don't believe it's the sponsor's intent to significantly increase the rental rates. These three sections is actually something the committee is going to need to look at as to how they want to deal with rentals. If that's something where it would be appropriate to put something that is currently in regulation in statute to clarify, or if there's another way that that the committee wants to approach that. And again, the Department of Natural Resources is online to talk about that. But I think the rental section was kind of a question mark that came up in our discussions on this bill. Really, it was our intent to make it clear and update this language since it hasn't been updated in so long, and there are always some kind of questions that come up with that. So
and just to clarify, under the coal royalty and these others, the statutes that we're relying on for the regulations are not state statutes, those are territorial statutes?
Chair Seaton, for coal royalty, it's territorial statutes, and I did not get the chance to ask Kerwin this morning if that was the same for mining rentals, but...
He's online, and we can ask him that question when it comes. Representative Gardner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you like us to wait until she's finished to ask questions or to ask questions as we come to the section?
I think it'd probably be easier just to ask him as we go along.
Okay, in that case, I have a question about Section 1. And do I understand correctly, you say the regulations have already been updated and so the statute changes conforming to that. Does that mean that the lessees, it'll be seamless to them, there won't be a change?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, that's correct. That is my understanding with conversations with the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you.
And again, just for clarification, you know, if we don't have statutory authority and we're relying on territorial statutes to authorize regulations to be updated, that's kind of nebulous as to where we are. And so we can get Department of Law to update that as well, but address that. But that's the current situation. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The royalty, is that set at the time the mineral lease is granted? Or is that something set once a mine goes into production, or when does that royalty start?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, are you referring to coal royalty or mineral mining royalty?
Oh, coal royalty for right now.
Through the chair, Representative Feige, I believe, or co-chair Feige, I believe it's the date that production begins, and the department will be able to clarify that for you.
Could we ask somebody to clarify that then?
Sure.
Is that royalty established at the time of the lease, or at the time of first coal?
And Department of Natural Resources, either Wynn Menifee or Kerwin Krause or Bill Cole, I believe are all online. Did you hear that question, and who would be the appropriate person to answer that question?
Chairman, this is Wynn Menifee, and I would like Kerwin Krause to answer the question.
Thank you very much. And Kerwin, did you hear the question? Representative Feige.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The coal royalty that they talk about in Section 1 here, when is that royalty amount determined? Is it determined at the time that the mineral lease is granted, or is it determined at some later date?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, it's actually determined in regulation, and that is basically set for a 20-year term, and every 20 years it's subject to change.
Okay, is that the same for minerals other than coal?
No. Locatable minerals are not subject to change. It's set at 3%. And coal is currently at 5% adjusted gross value.
Okay, thank you.
Are there further questions for DNR? Okay, thanks. Go ahead, Katie.
I'd like to return to page 1 of the Simplified Comparative Sectional, Section 6. This establishes a new royalty. The current royalty for mineral mines is 3% of net income for mines on state land. Section 6 replaces that with a 3% of net smelter return. That's 3% of the gross value of the mineral at the point of production. So this is a significant change, basing the royalty that's paid to the state on the actual value of the mineral versus the income of the mine. And Section 7 defines net smelter return. And that's the current price of the mineral minus what was spent processing and transporting it between the refinery and the mine. That's a new definition.
Before we go on, is there anyone that has questions on net smelter return and what the difference is between that and the current net profit? I mean, they're both 3%, but net profit. And net smelter return is an actual basic royalty on, like on oil and gas, we get 12.5% basic, generally, of the value of the what comes out as a royalty. Under the current statute, it's 3% of net profit. So if you have an inefficient company or one that has very high expenses, you may get no royalty at all. If you have someone that is efficient, then they pay a higher royalty on profits. It can also be that since all mining expenses are deducted immediately, it can be many, many years before you ever get any, quote, you know, paper net profit. So the state gets no royalty for many, many years from a very large and productive operation. So that's the intent of this change, is to go from a net profit that is manageable by the company, because depending on their expenses, depending upon how they do things, they can change a profitability, whereas the net smelter return is the actual value of the minerals, but it's also, just like with oil, it's after the transportation costs. So if those transportation costs go to Asia, those transportation costs are subtracted, and then whatever the value is of the basic metal that's refined, then that's that would be the value where that 3% would come from. So just to clarify what, because that's a big distinction of what the big change. Don't see any other questions. Go ahead, Katie.
And maybe worth mentioning that NSR is a company. Let's see, landholders use NSR for calculating royalty. Other places in Alaska, I believe Mental Health Trust has some NSR royalty, and then of course other places in the U.S. So it's not a unique or new Seton invention.
just to be clear, that, you know, in the past we really haven't had a problem or an issue with royalties or on, because this only applies to mines on state land, and almost all mines in the state of Alaska are either on native land, in which the native corporation generally has a net smelter return royalty, or it's on mental health trust land, such as Fort Knox, where mental health trust has a net smelter return royalty. And the question is, if the mines in the state can and do negotiate a net smelter return when they're mining on private lands, private or public, like mental health trust, but separate agency, then why should it be different if the mine was on state lands? And that's been the question that's been asked and what's being addressed here. And, you know, the general rule is that net smelter returns that we've been given information on, not from the state, but from the private parties, are that they run somewhere generally between 3.5% and 5.5% in that range. So if an industry wants to come forward and give us some other data, that's fine, but we can't, you know, demand that. So that's from the other side of the equation, that's what we've been able to discern. Any other questions on net smelter return? Okay, go ahead, Kate.
Section 8 defines gross value at point of production. This is important because, of course, the royalty is determined on the value of that mineral.
To reach assistance, press 0. To enter a breakout session, press 1.
We'll take a brief at ease.
I'd like to enter a breakout session personally.
Record.
Again, we're on page 2 of the comparative sectional, section 8, where it talks about the gross value at point of production. This is an important value to determine because the royalty will be based on the value of the mineral at the mine head. And it just says that the value of that mineral at the mine head is determined by looking at where the mineral is sold and taking into consideration transportation costs for getting it to where it is sold. And then there's also provisions under Section 8 for if the department believes that the value that the mining company gives is not is an inaccurate value, for example, if it was not an arm's length transaction, or if the department has reason to believe that the transportation cost did not reflect the true transportation cost of transporting that mineral. And those are just kind of ways for the department to make sure that the state is getting an accurate and true value for the resource.
And to clarify on that arm length transaction, that would be that if there was a company that had a partner that was the transportation company, or they had a partner that was a smelter, or they had those kind of relationships, so that the values were shifting costs, which would change the value, and that were not reasonable as far as what a third party would pay, then the state could come in and make adjustments. Representative Gardner, and then Feige.
Doesn't that make it kind of challenging for the state? They have to make judgment calls and sort of research the returns. I mean, how would the state know if the trucking company is a partner of the mining company, or if the transaction was arm's length or not? And it just seems kind of complex to figure out.
And Representative Gardner, just to be clear, we generally have these kind of provisions so that you don't have cost shifting from one to the other. If they're reasonable charges, then I presume the department is going to accept them. If all of a sudden it's seeming that all of the profits are being shifted from one to another, just like we monitor the TAPS tariffs, they have to be reasonable. They have to be accurate. Otherwise, we would be shifting costs from the wellhead value to the transportation value, and that shift would be there. So I understand the complexity. This doesn't say that the department would have to analyze everything, but they have the ability, if there are not things that appear to be third-party, the same cost of a third-party transaction, then they could come in and could challenge that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But we've had a whole bunch of lawsuits against the TAPS lines for exactly that reason. So I'll be interested in hearing as we go through this from the department about their take on how complex this would be, or whether it builds in dispute.
And we'll have them, Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How do you verify how much placer gold a placer miner takes out of the gravel?
Through the chair, co-chair Feige, regulations would be established by the department. It would depend on where the market is for that gold and where they sell that from. Would be just like they would for a large mine, and I assume there'd be some self-reporting also involved in that.
So you're depending on the placer miner to tell you how much mineral he's taken out of the ground?
Through the chair, Co-Chair Feige, that's what I understand, just like you'd be depending on a large mining company to accurately report what they're taking out of the ground. Section 9, again on page 2, just deals with the application period for a mining license. Currently, an application for the renewal of a mining license is due before May of each year. This just says it's due before May 1st or 30 days after mining begins, whichever is later. It's just to give some more flexibility for the application period. Section 10 has to deal with the mining license tax deferral. Currently, mining companies, excluding sand and gravel, have an exemption of the mining license tax for their first 3.5 years. Section 10 of House Bill 58 changes that to a deferral. They then have to pay back over the next 10 years without interest. Section 11 is no substantive change, just DNR certifying the date production begins. Section 12 of the bill is another meaty section. It deals with the mining license tax rates. And again, these rates have not been substantially changed since statehood. And what House Bill 58 does is it makes the dollar brackets for the mining license tax, updates them to be more reflect today's dollar values. It exempts anyone whose net income is under $100,000 from having to pay a mining license tax, and it increases the percentage of the tax on a bracketed scale by 2 percentage points. So if you look on the section in italics, there that's current mining license tax rates. And currently, anyone with a net income under $40,000 is exempt. And if you go up to the chart above that, House Bill 58 makes that under $100,000, just taking into account the difference in the reality of a dollar in today's market. And you'll see that current mining license taxes has a bracketed scale that tops out at about at $100,000 and 7%. And the proposed mining license tax has a bracketed scale that tops out at $1 million. And you'll see the corresponding increases in the percentage of the tax from a range of 3 to 7 to a range of 5 to 11. And we do have some charts in your packet that will explain later the revenue effect of those changes.
And I'd just like to point out to the committee that there are a couple of differences here. Not only do miners have an exclusion for the first $100,000, but if you look at the next bracket under the proposed mining, it would be 5% up to $250,000. The current tax is you have 5% up to $100,000 before you, and then you skip to 7%. So it more than doubles the amount of income that you can have at the 5% rate. And then you go to the 7% rate up to $500,000. And that, so there's a difference there when you become much more profitable than there are the two other brackets, the 9% and 11% over $1 million. There's also a difference that should be understood, and that is currently you pay 3% of if you're between $40,000 and $50,000, you pay 3% of the entire amount. So if you see on the next line down, the base tax is $1,500. That's 3% of $50,000. So that's $1,500 you pay under, so it's not fully bracketed like it is on the proposed mining tax. You, up to the first $100,000 is never taxed. The $100,001 to $250,000 is taxed at 5%. And then the next is bracketed up. So there is a difference there because the current mining license does go down and recuperate, tax all of it. Even if you make $40,050, you pay the tax on all of the amount that you made. whereas that's not the case in the proposed rate. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, do mining license taxes, are those collected for private land or only state land?
The mining license tax are collected on all mining in the state.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions on the... Katie, go ahead.
Section 13 makes no substantive changes. It just outlines the procedure for taxing multiple mines and updates the language to confirm with current drafting style. Legislative Legal was anxious to do a lot of drafting updates with this legislation because it hasn't been looked at in quite a while. Section 14 is what I would consider the third meaty section of the bill, and that is to delete the existing depletion statute and only allow cost depletion. Currently, a mining company can choose in any given year between percent depletion and cost depletion as far as what they deduct from their mining license tax. And this is often percent depletion, because it's based on a formula in statute, is much more advantageous for their accounting purposes. And remember, all of the taxes that the state charges right now are based on income, so there's a lot of incentive to get your net income reflect that it's quite as low as you possibly can. And so Section 14 only allows cost depletion, which means you can only deduct what you actually spend, the actual cost of depletion.
And it's a funny term, cost depletion, but it just means you're writing off all your expenses. But the current statute, and we've checked with a number of mining companies, and I don't think anywhere else in the world still uses percent depletion, and they sure don't let people switch back and forth between cost depletion, in other words, aggregating all your major costs in one year and then writing all those off. And then the next year you come along and you say, well, we've taken out 50% of the mineral that we estimate to be there, so we only have to pay 50% of the tax. That's the percent depletion idea. And so, anyway, that's the change. Representative Wilson.
And I'm sorry, I'm sure this was, well, maybe it wasn't asked, but I just can't remember the difference between, I guess it's back here. I can't find it. The difference, darn it. Oh, what's an arm's length transaction?
Thank you, Representative Wilson. An arm's length transaction means that you're acting like you were selling to a third party instead of a subsidiary. If you have your major company and then you have a subsidiary like a transportation company, the arm's length transaction would be as if you paid another trucking company to haul your stuff and it would cost you $20,000. You owning that trucking company can't charge $120,000 and then move money out of your profit on the minerals to your profit on the trucking company, which would then not be taxable, to escape your it's to prevent accounting from the right pocket to the left pocket changes, which if we allow them, my theory is that what we allow in the tax code, we shouldn't browbeat people for using. So if we don't want people to be able to shift their income and reduce their profitability so they don't have to pay taxes, then we should take care of it in the statute. And so that's what this does, just assures that there won't be this cost shifting. Katie?
Moving on to page 4. Sections 15 through 20 of the bill are primarily definitions. The first two definitions have no substantive changes. We'll highlight Section 17, which disallows the deduction of state corporate income taxes from the mining license tax. Current statute allows mining companies to deduct their state corporate income tax from their mining license tax, and so Section 17 changes that. The other new definition under these set of definitions in House Bill 58 is Section 20, which defines the date production begins when a mining company first ships their product. Section 21 repeals a number of sections that are no longer needed because of changes in the bill. It repeals some references to rentals. It repeals the reference to the application date for renewing licenses, because we covered in a different section, and repeals the definition of the date production begins, because it's also covered in a different section. Section 22 applies the legislation to all leases entered into or negotiated after December 31st, 2011, and Section 23 is the effective date, January 1st, 2012. Very ambitious effective date.
Yeah. Are there further questions at this time? Representative Gardner? No?
If I may, I would just like to walk the committee through a couple other items in their packet that they might find interesting or for further study. You'll see the next tab is Fraser Index and Polls. And many of you are aware of the Fraser Institute. It's a company that surveys professionals and kind of executives and gets a pulse from industry on an industry. And I believe that you've discussed this regarding oil taxes as well. But I just took a few excerpts out of the 2009-2010 Fraser survey just to highlight really what amazing potential, mineral potential, that Alaska has. If you'll see figure three, which considers mineral potential assuming best practices and no land use restrictions, places Alaska second after the Democratic Republic of Congo. So we are, as we know, a very rich state with lots of potential. The next figure, figure eight, it's taxation regime, just compares our taxation regime. Again, this is according to executives and professionals in the field, and lists us at about 19 out of 53 different states and countries. And figure 18, the next page, is the composite policy and mineral potential. So taking our really great mineral potential into consideration and our policy, where do we rank compared to all of our other mineral producing friends and neighbors? And you'll see that we are number 5 on that chart. The last page from this Fraser excerpt is that I wanted to highlight was up in the upper right-hand corner, which asks the people surveyed how they rate the importance of mineral potential versus policy factors. And you'll see that mineral potential is rated at 60.35%, so significantly higher than policy, just highlighting that the first thing that a mining company really is going to be care about is our mineral potential and if we have the goods. And Alaska definitely has mineral potential. The second section of this little tab are just a couple of Helenthal polls that were taken in 2007 surveying the Alaskan public and whether or not they favor or oppose increasing mining taxes. And you'll see that there's on page, 5 of the first poll, which was in February. Question number 10. Asks if the public would strongly favor, somewhat oppose, or strongly oppose a ballot initiative requiring large mines to pay 10% of their gross profit to the state. And although that is not what House Bill 58 proposes, it just is a pulse at that moment of how the public felt. And you'll see the composite of strongly favor and somewhat favor is 70%. And then another follow-up poll that was done in March of 2007, you'll see page 9, also poll. Question 23 polls opposing increased taxes on the mining industry, and it's 51.3% of the public surveyed at that time favor increasing mining taxes. And again, this is just a snapshot at that point in time, but really we just wanted to highlight kind of the public perception as these two polls reflect it. The next tab is the State Assessor Report. This is also from 2007, and it's just a very interesting read because it compares what the state of Alaska is doing with other jurisdictions, and it makes some recommendations on some changes. It does reference House Bill 156, which was in the 25th legislature, the same legislation that you have before you. So even though that's a different bill number, it makes the same changes. These changes, that the bill that you see before you right now came out of a very productive number of meetings in the House Ways and Means Committee, where we really got to hammer out a lot of these issues. So that's the work that has been put into House Bill 58 that you see before you. Just an interesting read. The next tab is Department of Revenue graphs. And again, these are graphs that were prepared by Joanna Bales from the Tax Division of the Department of Revenue, and they show the effect of the changes in House Bill 58 on revenue to the state. If you look at the first chart, looks the effect of cost depletion. The second chart looks at the mining license tax revenues, and the third chart looks at those combined. And it basically takes the last 5 years and says, okay, if we were operating under House Bill 58, what would that revenue look like? And of note, and Joanna, if she's given a chance, I'm sure we'll want to highlight this, is the Department of Natural Resources governs the royalty. So the royalty, which under House Bill 58 would be significantly different, is not calculated into these numbers. Because the Department of Revenue does not deal with the royalty statutes. So this is just the mining license section and the section of the bill that only allows cost depletion. And I'm sure she'd be happy to explain these numbers to you if you'd like. The next tab is a Ledge Research Report that we requested. And I believe the real meat of this report is page 3. And I think what Representative Seaton really wanted to get at with House Bill 58 is ensure that Alaskans are receiving something for our resources, that we are receiving a fair value for our resources, because they do belong to all Alaskans, and that's the responsibility, is that we get something for that non-renewable resource. And so this chart prepared by Legislative Research takes the value of the resource and the government revenue and extrapolates a percentage, and that would be the percentage that the state of Alaska has received for the value of that resource. And you'll see that it's between less than 2% and at a high of less than 7% for the years 2001 through 2009. So the real policy call is, of that tremendous value of resource that's being extracted, is that adequate? And the last tab is for public testimony, and it's for all the overwhelming letters of support that you will be receiving on this bill.
So, Katie, just for explanation on that chart on table one there, so that's all, I think I see the government revenue on that chart is all state and municipal taxes and fees. So if there's municipal severance tax or municipal property tax, and the royalties and the mining license tax, I presume, are all rolled into that. That's a total government take, in other words, is listed on that percentage on the right-hand side.
That is correct, Chair Seaton.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. In the DNR graphs section, the 2007 colors are different. Is that inadvertent or significant? They're white instead of green?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, Joanna Bales would be a great person to ask that of, and I believe she's online.
Joanna Bales, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Gardner had a question. Would you restate that, please?
Yes. We have a series of three graphs showing mining license tax revenues. And the first one is in red and blue, actual data versus cost depletion only. The second one is actual data versus House Bill 58 rates only. And for 2007, it's blue and white instead of blue and green. And I wondered if that's sort of an inadvertent difference, and it also applies to the third chart, which is total revenue effect of House Bill 58.
Well, for the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the acting director of the Tax Division. Through the chair, Representative Gardner, it's a combination of two. We updated these charts from what we had prepared back in the 25th legislative session. And at that time, we had highlighted the 2007 year different from the rest. We had some previous years on the chart just to, because there was such a significant increase in revenues in 2007 over the historical numbers. As you can see, we also have some fluctuation going down again where revenues tapered off. But in that year, it was quite a significant amount of revenue, period, from the standpoint that resources, mineral prices had increased significantly, and we wanted to point that out.
Follow up, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. So I understand that the color difference was intentional, but the, in terms of looking at the chart and meaning and the meaning of the color, it, we should consider it to be that yellowish green color that the others are.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Gardner, that's correct.
Thank you.
Joanna, this is Representative Seaton. I was wondering whether, like on the first one there, mining license tax revenues, effective cost depletion only, did you have the, I don't know whether we can talk about in numbers of taxpayers, or maybe we could say on percentage of taxpayers that didn't use cost depletion but used resource depletion in those years?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, most of our taxpayers do use percentage depletion because there becomes a point in a mine's life where your cost depletion has been completely utilized, basically, and so then you're left with percentage depletion. And so most of these mines, because of the percentage depletion, are in that in the percentage depletion stage. Does that make sense?
I think so. Just to clarify then, the differences we're seeing on here is probably not from companies switching from one year to another from cost depletion to revenue depletion, but just that most of the mines are writing off percentage of the resource that's already been extracted and lowering their tax rates because of that factor instead of writing off their costs.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that would be correct, because cost depletion basically goes away once your actual costs have all been depleted. So it happens very quickly when you have percentage depletion in your statute. So that's correct.
And could you explain just exactly how percent depletion works?
Okay, Mr. Chairman. First let me explain cost depletion so I can put it in the proper focus. When a company develops a mine, they have certain costs that they expend that are capitalized. They don't take those as a current year operating expense. And those costs that are capitalized to develop the mine then become your cost basis for depletion. And so under cost depletion, you are allowed to basically, we call it depletion, but it's similar to depreciation. You're allowed to depreciate or deplete those costs until all of the costs, the actual costs that you've incurred, have been expended. What percentage depletion does, percentage depletion isn't based on any cost that you've incurred in the mine. You are allowed, it is simply a statutory percentage of the amount of gross income that you report each year that you are allowed to take as a depletion expense. So even though you no longer have any costs that you haven't already depleted, you are continued to be allowed to take a deduction. So that's what percentage depletion is. And like I said, it's not based on any cost at all. In fact, a lot of explanation of percentage depletion is it's basically a subsidy.
Okay, and that subsidy, is that pretty much a straight line? In other words, let's say a mine goes into existence that says it has $50 million worth of minerals, and after they've extracted $25 million worth of minerals, then they get to take their tax rate, and then they pay half of that because they've extracted half of the minerals, and so they don't have those to go into the future?
Chairman Seaton, actually what you described there is more cost depletion, where cost depletion is based on the amount of minerals you extracted. Percentage depletion is based entirely on the gross income from the sale of the product. You don't even take into account how much of the resource that you have left. It is just a percent of the gross income that you received for the year.
And is that fixed or does that change over time?
It is fixed in statute.
So it's fixed for the entire life of the mine?
That's correct.
Okay, and I guess I'm trying to figure out then that percentage that you get to write off your taxes or the subsidy, that what is that percentage, and is there a difference? Does that mean the larger the mine is, the larger percentage they get to write off, or is it a single percentage for all mines?
Chairman Seaton, it's a single percentage, but it's based on the mineral that you're extracting. And I'm looking real quickly here. I was trying to find out what the percents are, but it's like 7% for different kinds of minerals. I think it's 10 or 15% on gold extraction. It's either 10 or 15% of silver. I can get those numbers for you, but it's based on the type of mineral that's extracted. It doesn't have anything to do with the size of the mine.
Okay, and I think Katie can direct this. Maybe we have it in our packet here.
Katie Custer, staff to Representative Seaton. Under mining license tax 4365010, outlines the percent depletion for metal mines, which is primarily what House Bill 58 deals with, and that is 15%. And Section F of that says that the allowance for depletion may not exceed 50% of the net income of the taxpayer. Coal is 10%, and sulfur mines is 23%.
So did I hear you that it's 15%, but that can't exceed 50% of the net income?
Chair Seaton, that's correct.
Okay, so our tax is based on a net income, and then we allow a write-off up to 50% of that net income to not pay taxes on, as you understand. Joanna, is that basically right?
That's basically correct. So the percentage depletion, let's say for a gold mine, would be 15% of the gross income, but then it can't exceed 50% of your net income. So after you've taken off your expenses from the gross, you still have 50% of your net income that you can't reduce.
Okay, thank you. There are other folks that have questions on that? Yes, Representative Wilson.
Not on that.
Does anybody else have any questions on cost and percent depletion? Okay. Representative Wilson.
Well, I'm looking at the next to the last tab, the last sheet,
Ledge Research Report.
Next to the last sheet, where it tells us what percentages the state of Alaska, I assume that is getting from the mining companies.
Does everybody have that? That's page 3 of the Legislative Research Report.
And then I want to go to page 8 under the tab that says State Assessor Report. If you go to page 8, and looking at that, it seems like those percentages are very low, but when we look at...
Just a moment, let us all get this. Now, the page 8 is a landscape printed
well, it's got several,
table.
Yeah, and it's got several states on there.
States to the left-hand side margin. And okay.
And
let everybody...
Page 8 on which tab?
On the tab that says State Assessor's Report. It's about the middle tab.
And...
This one?
Yes. And just saying, let's make sure. It looks like this.
Bennett.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Okay, so I'm just trying to kind of have something to compare with. And I'm looking at our percentages, and those percentages do seem pretty low. But when I go back over here to this page where it's got the other states on it, it says Alaska income rates are between 1% to 9.4%. And then it goes, if you go on over under the column, 7th column, most of them don't have royalties, but we do. So when we add the royalties on, does that make us get quite a bit compared to other states? That's what I'm wondering. I don't want us to ever be in the position that we are in right now with the oil and the gas tax. And so I'm looking. So what are our royalties for the mining?
Our current royalties are 3% of net income. And if you look on that chart page that you were talking about, page 3, that last report, that column on the right, mm-hmm. is total government take. In other words, that's all state and municipal taxes, fees, and royalties collected from the mining industry. Representative Munoz?
I don't believe this includes the corporate tax, though. So just for clarification, I think that's an important addition as well.
Okay, and Joanna Bales, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
And on the, do you have the Legislative Research Services report of February 3rd, 2011?
No, I don't have that in front of me.
Okay, we'll have to get you that. Can't ask you to comment on that if you don't have it. I think we have somebody else from Revenue here, but I don't know if they're in a position to look at that either. No, they're...
Okay.
The one thing that we did hear was that currently we have a net tax on corporate net tax rates, which are deductible from your net tax for your mining license tax, which is unusual because we don't allow that in any other places where you take a net percentage tax and you subtract that from another net percentage tax. But that's a question we need to answer, and I'm not circumventing it. I'm just not sure that we have anybody here at the moment can do it. But Joanna, do you have a fax number?
Yes, I do. I can actually pull it. Are those documents online?
Yes, they're on basis.
Okay, I can pull those. It'll take me just a couple of minutes.
Okay, that's good. We'll go on and we'll come back to that.
Okay.
Important question, and, yeah. And she'll get back to us. Yeah. Too.
I just kind of would like to know how we compare overall to other states.
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree, and I agree it's an important question that we need to ask.
Or in other countries, too.
Are there, let's see, Katie, were you working on something else, and did I?
Chair Seaton, I think I just wanted to highlight the sentence in the notes on the Ledge Research Report that probably raised a question for Representative Munoz. The Department of Revenue cautions that because corporate income tax revenue reflects parent corporation activity, the data provided may not accurately reflect mining activities in Alaska. So that's probably the where we need some clarity on exactly what that means.
And where is that in here?
That's on page 3 on the chart under the notes section.
Oh, and in the notes. So this does include corporate taxes, but we can't tell that the corporate taxes are exclusive of mining. It might also include other deductions or not. And that, Representative Wilson, that's in the middle of those notes.
Yeah, where, I've got it.
Okay.
And it says, except corporate income and mining tax, a license tax. But they're reported, but not till the next year.
Right. So those are that's the succeeding fiscal years. So some are calendar years and some are fiscal years. So they've combined them. But when you get a series, you'll get all that combination. But I think what that means is that you can't tell that in 2005, for instance, that isn't going to have some of the carryover from the fiscal year previous or post, but it's not going to appear twice. And Joanna, are you online now? Do you have that chart, table 1 of that?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. I do have this in front of me.
If you're not prepared, we can go on and let you look at that for a few minutes.
May I clarify, the question is whether or not the corporate income tax is included in those numbers?
Yes, that was the question that Representative Munoz said.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I'm fairly certain that does include the corporate income tax because I remember getting the request for the report for the corporate income tax portion. From the mining industry. So, yes, that would include the corporate income tax.
Okay, so just to be clear, you know, we've been using a term government take quite a bit, and this would be a combination of all government take, including municipal and state taxes, license fees, and is that correct?
That's my understanding about this report, yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson.
Joanna, you don't. Do you have anything that shows how we compare with other states or other nations, other countries?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I think there is something out there, and I'm not sure if Ms. Kester actually had that. I think there is a Fraser Institute report that identifies that when you add all the taxes up, how our government take does compare to other states and countries. I know there's something like that. If you don't have that now, we can check and see if we can find that.
Well, we do have it. It's figure 3 on 18, but it doesn't have the numbers. It just has a graph.
The tax would be, the tax regime is separate, and that's the middle one,
okay.
Which is just the taxes, not looking at the best practices of mineral extraction. And you can see Alaska is.
Katie Kester, staff to Representative Seaton, comparing our taxes with other areas gets very difficult for all the reasons that you can imagine, whether someone does a severance, someone does a property tax, someone has a license and a corporate, and what are the deductions? Because as you can tell from the conversation that we've had, what you allow to be deducted also can very much change the final outcome. So that's certainly something that we will put more energy towards to give you an accurate picture. But as you can imagine, it's not as easy as it might, as I wish it was.
And just like we were just talking about the percent depletion, where we allow percent depletion, all of a sudden you'll have a tax rate, and where's our tax rate look? Well, our tax rate looks one way if you look at the taxes, but then if you can write off 50% of the taxes, all of a sudden that doesn't show up in the comparison, and all, but in reality it becomes really low because you're essentially taxing at half the net tax, as long as that gross value was high and there were expenses incurred. Let's see, do we have any other questions for staff? Thank you. Let's see if we can go to Division of Mining, Land, and Water. You've heard our discussion here. Do you have any clarifications you can add to any of the issues that we've been bringing up?
Chairman Seaton, this is Wynn Menefee, Acting Director of Division of Mining, Land, and Water. I think that at this point, I don't think we have any clarifying statements, but just are available to answer any further questions.
Okay, and one of the questions we had was on the regulations where we're relying on territorial statutes to be the basis for those regulations. Do we have anything from your AG section or anything on how appropriate or inappropriate that is to be doing 50 years after statehood?
Chairman Seidman, this is when we do not have any statement from the AGs or Department of Law on that.
Would you, we'd like to ask you to research that and provide us with some information on the on that issue.
We will do that.
Okay, thank you. Are there further questions that anybody has for Division Mining, Land, and Water? Are there any further questions for Joanna Bales, Department of Revenue? Seeing none, I will just wrap up, and I would like to say that appreciate the committee's time and effort looking at this. I think that it's something, you know, when we haven't looked at the issues since statehood, we find a lot of anomalies. We find a lot of things that might be out of sync with modern and current availability of values. We have a fairly low exempt amount, and then as soon as a placer miner goes over the $40,000, they get taxed on all of the money. That doesn't seem to be what the legislature has, in the direction the legislature has been moving. And we haven't looked at for a long time if we have a or many large mines on state land, if our tax code and our royalties are sufficiently robust to provide our constitutional obligation to the citizens of the state to get a return on the investment, not the investments, but the resources of the state to the people of the state. So I think that we'll put this aside now, and appreciate everybody's looking at this. We'll get those answers back from DNR. We'll circulate those. If anybody has any further questions, if they would get them to the sponsor directly, and we will put this aside, and now we will take up Senate Joint Resolution 2. Welcome, Senator Dyson. Would you identify yourself for the record and your staff if you'd like to introduce them too, and then we'll go ahead with your presentation.
Yeah, Senator Fred Dyson, Eagle River. And with me is my Chief of Staff, Charles Kopp. And thank you for hearing SJR 2. We have in this state, I think, an admirable record of doing a good job of managing our own resources, and I suspect you, Mr. Chair, have tracked the improvement in our fisheries in general since 1959. We have watched what appears to be some very unfortunate overstepping, in my view, from the federal government that's hugely restraining our ability to be stewards of our resources and develop them in a way that's consistent with our own competition, our Constitution. So we got this resolution together, and the purpose of it is to let the powers that be understand that the people of Alaska in general really back up what the present state administration is trying to do, and that this administration is not speaking on its own. I might add, and it's been through quite a bit of modification in resources and judiciary and
in resources by a bipartisan working group.
Yeah, and it passed the Senate 20-1, which was 20-0. I'm sorry. Boy,
I was wondering where our new senator came from.
Forgive me, I went to public school. And also at the back of your packet, you'll see a sheet like this. And we didn't know it, but all the Native corporations that were here presented us with a packet of information, and these are their concerns, which read almost like what we put in the resolution, and we did not know that until they got here. So, Chuck, anything else you want to say?
Would you identify yourself for the record first?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Dyson. That presentation the senator was talking about was to the House Resources luncheon there. It was the concerns of the Native corporations given by Ethan Shute, Vice President of Surrey. And we just noted that it was similar to the resolution and consistent with concerns that we believe most Alaskans share. So we included that as a supplemental for your information.
Okay. So just to be clear then, this was not presented to as testimony on the resolution, but it corresponds closely with the direction, and so you've included it for that reason.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
No, good point.
Are there questions for the senator or his staff? Seeing none, we have online Sally Gilbert from DNR for questions. Representative Gardner.
All right, I do have just a quick question for the senator, or maybe the answer won't be quick. But the question is, when you're talking in throughout this resolution about management of state resources, and we've just had a discussion about taxing of mining and whether the mines are on state land or Native land or privately held land. When you talk about state resources and management, you're talking holistically about the entire state of Alaska, whether the lands are federal or state. So we're including things like the Outer Continental Shelf and NBRA and...
Oh, how I wish I was.
Okay.
And under current under court and federal government, we don't have much authority on federal lands, including sadly a management of fish and game. and that's unfortunate. I hope that changes. But this is specifically aimed at what I believe is an overstepment of the federal regulators on state lands.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions at this point? So we do have Sally Gilbert from DNR online to answer questions if anyone has any questions. No one has any questions of DNR. Is there anyone online to testify on SDR2? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to offer testimony on SDR2? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. We have before us a committee substitute for Senate Joint Resolution Number 2 Resources. We have version I. Will of the committee be prepared for a motion on this? Representative Munoz.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to move.
I'd just like to ask a question if I could.
Sure. Representative Dick.
I'm certainly all in favor of this. The only thing that concerns me, and I'm just new to this whole process, is I wish there was some way we can make a stronger statement, some way we could be, this is my question. By doing this, are we just relieving our consciences, or in your experienced opinion, is this really going to have an impact, or help me understand this process, because inwardly I feel I have a desperate need to say more, louder, better, stronger.
Senator, I share your concern and your frustration. Generally speaking, resolutions have very little more value than the paper they're written on. And unfortunately, sometimes they have very disproportionate influence. There was a major article New York Times or the Wall Street Journal?
New York Times.
The New York Times. And we were hoping to get this done before that, so that the author of that could say that there was widespread support within the state for what they're doing. Now, I'm hoping we'll get it done, and the Wall Street Journal has got another one coming out, and it'll be there. So to the degree that we speak for the people we represent, it has that additional value. There's some hint in these proceedings in court that it might be slightly helpful. Not legally, but to show that there's widespread support. And most all of these are court cases that this administration is pushing forward to try to reestablish our stewardship of our own resources.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I'm looking through all the backup letters. I guess that's how they're characterized. And the whole segment entitled Alaska Native Corporations Resource Development. And we talked about this a little bit, but as I look at these in more detail, they don't seem to specifically apply to your resolution. They're just about resource development in general.
And you're exactly right. And the chair pointed out they didn't give this to us to endorse our resolution.
Right.
We just were at the meeting that I think you guys had something to do with and noticed the very similarity of that one page where they're speaking about federal actions that were restraining their ability to develop their resources for their members.
Thank you. And if I might, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner, follow up.
That's why I was asking the question about the federal overreach and federal lands and state lands. Okay.
Are there further questions for the sponsor? Representative Munoz?
Yes. Okay. I'd like to move CS for SJR 2, version I, with individual recommendations and zero discipline.
Seeing no objection, SJR, committee substitute for the SJR 2, resources version, that's 27LS0355/I, will move from committee with attached zero fiscal note and individual recommendations. And thank you for bringing us forward, Senator.
Thank you for your
Are there anything else at this point in time to come before the committee. Committee, please stay around to sign the bill packet, and we will be adjourned at 2:26.